May it please the court, Your Honor, all of your honors. I'm Steve Swinger, pro se, representing myself in a case.
Did you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Oh, yeah, excuse me, 3 minutes, please.
3 minutes, okay.
Yeah.
No, well, it says zero, you still have three.
Okay, I'm not nervous or anything. This involves four different causes of action, and I believe the reason for appealing this is I believe that there's some obvious errors made by the trial court. There was a lot of discussion in the trial court, summary judgment, et cetera, in regard to cases, case law, what unjust enrichment is, what a benefit is, et cetera. But all cases are different. And to refer to one case, then I can say, well, in this case it said this, in this case it said that. But my feeling is the more important, which I'm leaning on for my defense or for my appeal on this, is the fact of what the documents say, what the letter said to the CREP or the project, which is the one that was going to do enhancement to my property. Mr. Lee sent them a letter. This all started, of course, in federal court, as you might have read in the brief. Mr. Lee filed a case against me in federal court for adverse possession. In that adverse possession brief that I read, he said that his client had used my property for grazing cattle for 20 years. So my response to that, well, nobody paid me for it. He used it and had the use of that property for 20 years. That appeared to be unjust enrichment to me. So in response to his adverse possession, I filed unjust enrichment. So that's kind of a little bit of the background of how it came to this. That trial went to the appellate court, and the appellate court removed it, denied it, whatever the word may be, for jurisdictional purposes. So after that federal trial was closed, then I came back and I start reading what my documents were, and I said, well, if he's going to claim he used it for 20 years, I think I deserve some compensation, some unjust enrichment. A couple of the cases in regard to unjust enrichment, one of them, well, they're all Washington cases, Young versus Young. Chandler is a Washington case, which says the benefit includes any form of advantage, not only financial, but the use of the land. And the restatement third in regard to unjust enrichment and restitution says is the word benefit therefore denotes any form of advantage. So I'm just saying he had a form of advantage. He admits he had the form of the advantage. I believe I have get compensation, should have compensation for the advantage that he received. One of the other causes of action, or the next cause of action, is the anti-SLAPP statute, which is RCW 424-500, which I'm sure the court's aware of, and concerning wrongdoing. And there is a case in regard to that. I don't know the gentleman's name or the plaintiff's name or the appellant's name, but it's against the city of Bellevue. It's a Washington court appeal case, and it just says that information communicated to the government agency must concern potential wrongdoing. And when you read the letter that the defendant wrote to the CREP program, there's no mention of me doing any wrongdoing, none at all. He's questioning, he wrote to the CREP program, the conservation program, and told them what they had done wrong. They essentially, the only thing I did was apply to the program. They came in, they surveyed the property, they posted corner markers where they wanted their, because the whole property isn't being redone with conservation shrubbery and vegetation, only certain areas of it along the river. So they came in and they marked all those areas prior to starting any work on the project. There wasn't direct access from my main part of my property to this area that's being disputed. They had to go through Mr. Vanderpool, request permission from him to access this area through his property. Initially, he gave permission. And, gee, 11 months later or something, he comes up and he says, no, you can't have permission. So the program went to the neighbor and we got indirect access to this portion of the property that they wanted to develop or redo. So when they came in and started doing all the removing of the brush, killing vegetation that they did not want, then Mr. Vanderpool decided that before that, he decided he wasn't going to let him have access to my property. But he wrote a letter to the CREP program complaining about what they were doing. And I just want to emphasize the fact that in my evidence package, you'll see pictures of two different government agencies who produce surveys in regard to the property. And both of those, they're showing my property as being the unjust enrichment property. Anyway, as far as the statutes concerned wrongdoing, there's just no wrongdoing. I did nothing but apply to the program. So I don't see how it's possible. And moving on to the tort, just briefly on the tort interference with the contract. Like I said, as this project started going and the CREP program was doing all the work, Mr. Vanderpool hired two attorneys, the first one and the second one, Mr. Lee, and they wrote the letter that's part of the evidence that says, the CREP program might be liable for this and that because my client owns that property. And so for that, I don't know, I believe that I meant the criteria for tort interference with a contract. There was a valid contract. He knew about it probably a year or more before that time. They provided him with a copy of the plan on what they were going to do and where they were going to do it. And then
you can finish your thought if you want.
Okay. And then on the last part of it is that I just think that intentionally interfering with it was sending them a letter that said something to the effect that, you've got legal liabilities here and we may have to do this legally if Mr. Swinger doesn't back off on his request.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I am Mark Lee. I represent Douglas Vanderpool on this matter. I think Mr. Swinger is overlooking the essential issues that are relevant to the appeal here. And admittedly, the case involves a variety of overlapping lawsuits and events that can become somewhat confusing. There's two specific facts that are essential to this thing. The first is that Mr. Swinger owns property on one side of the Nooksack River. Mr. Vanderpool owns property on the other side. Over the years, the river has moved. And Mr. Swinger, for years, has contended that he owns property on the side of the river that Mr. Vanderpool's property is on under the doctrine of avulsion. So the common thread of all the events and claims has been the persistent contention by Mr. Swinger that he owns this area of property. He first argued this when he sought to enter a lease with the Whatcom Conservation District under the CREP program. Mr. Vanderpool found out about that, wrote a letter to the program and said, hey, I believe I own that property, and therefore I'm not comfortable with you entering a lease with Mr. Swinger. And CREP and the conservation program did not enter the agreement with him. He then alleged that he owned the area in a lawsuit against First American Title in Whatcom County, and he filed a claim for breach of contract against FATCO, claiming that they failed to disclose in their title report property that was landlocked, and the landlocked property was the area on our side of the river. And an inherent requirement to prove that claim was that he owned the property. And so FATCO filed a motion for summary judgment and argued, you do not own that property, someone else owns that property. And you don't own it because the river has moved through accretion. And Mr. Swinger argued that he did own the property under the doctrine of avulsion. Judge Snyder ruled on summary judgment and granted FATCO's motion because the plaintiff lacked ownership of the property, the very property that's in dispute in this case. And then the case was dismissed with prejudice. Because Mr. Swinger continued to persist that he owned the real estate, we filed an action in federal district court, and we had to file there because the adjoining property to us is owned by the U.S. government. And when we went to the judge, before Judge Peckman, Mr. Swinger filed a counterclaim for unjust enrichment arising from the statements Mr. Vanderpool made to the CREP program. And so the first thing that Judge Peckman did was she dismissed the unjust enrichment claim under the anti-SLAPP statute, finding that the claim could not be brought because it was essentially based on the statements made by Mr. Vanderpool to a governmental agency. She then dismissed all counterclaims and affirmative defenses based on Mr. Swinger's alleged ownership of this area on our side of the river because he was collaterally stopped from doing so based on Judge Snyder's decision in the FATCO case. The matter was appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and Mr. Swinger is correct. The case was reversed based upon the procedural conclusion of the Ninth Circuit that the federal government had failed prior to the lawsuit to make a sufficient claim of ownership to trigger subject matter jurisdiction under the Quiet Title Act. And so that brings us to this case. Despite all of these events, Mr. Swinger has filed yet another lawsuit against Mr. Vanderpool seeking unjust enrichment arising from Mr. Vanderpool's use of this disputed area, again, claiming he owns the real estate, Mr. Swinger, and a tortious interference with contract claim for interfering with his CREP lease. So in this case, we merely followed the same template we followed with Judge Peckman and filed a motion for summary judgment seeking dismissal of the unjust enrichment claim because Mr. Swinger is barred under non-mutuality collateral estoppel. So the first issue is does the dispute in this claim relate to the same decision that was made in the FATCO case? And recall, in the FATCO case, Mr. Swinger had to prove he owned the real estate in order to prove breach of contract. And Judge Snyder found he didn't own the property. So the issues are identical. Inherently in this cause of action for unjust enrichment, he has to prove he owns the real estate. As Mr. Swinger even noted in his brief, in the FATCO case, Swinger had to establish ownership of the eastern property to establish his breach of contract claim. He failed to do that. Judge Snyder concluded he did not own the property. The issues are identical. So then the next issue is whether the prior adjudication in the FATCO case ended in a final judgment on the merits. And this is where it gets a little bit interesting, because it was a summary judgment, but it was followed by a dismissal of the case with prejudice. So you have two separate distinct orders to determine whether finality exists. First is the summary judgment motion. And in the Bunch case, which I've cited in our brief, the Court of Appeals for Division II simply states that a summary judgment motion is a final judgment for purposes of collateral estoppel. But for a more thorough understanding of that is the Cunningham case from this division. And in the Cunningham case, the court went through a quite detailed analysis of when is a decision final for purposes of collateral estoppel, and it talked about the opportunity and the opposition put up by the losing party. In this particular case, Mr. Swinger had an opportunity and assertively presented his position and argued that he owned this real estate in order to create a breach of contract claim against FATCO. It resulted in a final decision, as contained within the oral decision of Judge Snyder. You do not own the property, which was then followed by a dismissal with prejudice, which on its own is a final decision upon which collateral estoppel can lie. And so there is finality in the case upon which to find collateral estoppel. The next element, of course, is a party or privity, and Mr. Swinger was a party. And finally, there is the question of whether there has been an injustice or will be an injustice in applying collateral estoppel in this particular case. And Judge Urich found that that wouldn't be the case. And Mr. Swinger has argued that he didn't have an opportunity to vigorously challenge his ownership in the FATCO case because he had no idea that he needed to appeal, and he wasn't instructed by Judge Snyder that he needed to appeal. And in this particular case, the reality is that at the time that he entered his dismissal with prejudice on March 1st, 2012, he had already received the letter from my office explaining that Mr. Vanderpool contended he owned this area that was in dispute. He had also received a separate letter from the Conservation District stating that it was no longer going to enter the CREP program with him because there was a contention he did not own the real estate. And so he had an opportunity and he had knowledge to sufficiently motivate him to appeal that decision because the ownership issue had been presented as disputed by his neighbor at that point in time. The other claim he stated here is the tortious interference with contract claim. Now, this claim is based exclusively on the communications by Mr. Vanderpool to the CREP as part of the CREP program, and he contends that those communications led to the CREP program deciding not to enter the lease with him. That's absolutely true. That is what happened, because the CREP folks said, we're not going to decide who owns this real estate. We're not going to enter a lease where there's this dispute. But the question is whether or not that this claim then falls under the anti-SLAPP statute, RCW 4.25.510, which provides absolute immunity for a person where the claim is based upon the communications to a governmental agency regarding any matter reasonably of concern of the agency. Mr. Swinger's only contention has been that the letters to CREP didn't relate to any wrongdoing on his part, but that's not the test. The statute clearly states that the communication be regarding a matter of reasonable concern to the agency.
Mr. Swinger said there was a case involving the city of Bellevue that brought wrongdoing into it. Are you aware of what case that is by any chance?
I'm not off the top of my head, Your Honor. I apologize for that. But I understand where the language is coming from, because in the legislative intent statute, which accompanies this, the word wrongdoing is mentioned in there. But the cases, including the Bailey versus State case, have continuously followed the stated language of this particular statute, which refers to the communication having to be reasonably of concern to the agency. And so the wrongdoing qualifier has not been adopted and not been applied as a measuring stick. I do want to say, Your Honors, that I do appreciate that Mr. Swinger is pro se, and the situation he's been trying to represent himself, and I appreciate that, and I think we do need to recognize that. And that's why Judge Peckman's ruling, I think, is so important to us. He's been told exactly the parameters of these rules in that case. And yet, despite that, he's filed a separate lawsuit again. And for that reason, we ask that you affirm Judge Urich's decision in all respects. Thank you very much.
You've got 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. A couple points that I want to make. Are that in that Washington, that case against City of Bellevue, I could spell the name of the appellant, but I can't really pronounce it, I don't think. It's G-O-N-T-M-A-K-H-E-R, and it's in part of my written brief. Anyway, what they're saying, information communicated to the government agency must concern potential wrongdoing. Once again, they've never showed any wrongdoing that I've done in the case. And the intent of the statute is to, as he said in Bailey, but in the court, in the Bailey case, Bailey was an embezzler. So there was some wrongdoing by Bailey, but there's no wrongdoing, no show of wrongdoing by me. Another issue that I have to bring up, and I don't remember the state Supreme Court because I've read so many and can't remember. The Supreme Court said that it's not, for adverse possession, it's not only that you have to prove the other person doesn't own the property, you have to prove that you own the property through payment of property taxes or some other means. I've listed, I've gave copies as part of my brief, property tax bills, and numerous, I think there's 10 or 12 different reasons or examples of why I believe I own the property. I have been paying the property tax on it as long as I've owned it. The CREP program believes that I own that property, or at least initially did when they did the survey and prepared the map. There's a Department of River and Floods in Whatcom County that's the primary regulator for rivers and floods. They prepared a survey of the property, and it's in the file. And in that survey and in that picture, it's a little difficult to see, but there are property tax numbers, the same property tax number on the west side of the river as there is on the east side of the river. I'm paying property tax on 14.76 acres. That part on that east side of the river is part of that 14.76 acres. So what he's not doing is he's not providing any positive evidence as to how his client owns the property. He's just saying it's possible. Oh, and in regard to that summary judgment, me against the insurance company, FATCO, the Judge Snyder did not say, I don't own that property. What he actually said was, from what you've provided, you may own the property, but for a summary judgment verdict, you don't have enough evidence provided. And so I was going to provide that at trial, which never happened because they made me an offer. I took it, and we both went our ways. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you both.
Questions?
Next up is Pacific Market International versus TCAM Corp. Property.